Impulse. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. And I am in such touring mode. I'm currently in the middle of like, 13 shows in 16 days. I'm in such full touring mode that if you cut me, I bleed Travelodge. I bleed it and I love it. But I am keeping up with the news and there's a lot of news to discuss today. And doing that with me is Francis Foster. Welcome back to the show, Francis.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be on it, mate. Love it.
Okay. We've started well there. We haven't given each other shit yet. So I'm going to ask you, how do you keep up with the news? Is it, do you colour in books or do you mainly look at the pictures?
What are you talking? How long has it taken? It's literally been 40 seconds and you've already got in a nasty little jab. I'm a guest on your show, mate.
Sorry,
I bet
mate.
You don't do this. I bet when Catherine Ryan comes on, you don't make a joke about colouring books with her, do you? No.
Well, no, because I respect her. So,
unbelievable.
It's a genuine question. I am interested because obviously you are one half of one of the planet's biggest podcasts, you know, dealing with areas of political discourse and stuff. So, genuine question, how do you keep up with the news? What's your feed, bro?
What's my feed? I read three newspapers. One is the Times because it has a more centrist bent to it.
Good answer. One is
the Telegraph, which is more right-leaning. I think that's fair to say. And then I also read The Guardian and Twitter.
It sort of leans right there. For a guy that's always said, I'm actually left-wing, that sounds... You're centre-right, mate. You're like me. You're a boring centrist dad. That's what you are.
No, mate, I'm dangerous and exciting.
we've got a lot to discuss news-wise. There's stuff happening. We're recording this at 11:30. So it's always worth saying that when there's the prospect of Donald Trump saying anything about anything. But before we get on to telling you what's going to be in this week's show, I've got a new item, Francis. As you might know from my social media, I get really annoyed about things being expensive. And I've had a few posts recently that have gone really viral. So like anything in the world of comedy, you lean into go where the fish are biting, right?
Yeah.
What works? Piss take prices. I've got one for you. I was at Aberdeen Airport on Saturday morning, a 500 milliliter bottle of Sprite. What do you think it cost? What do you think
Aberdeen
cost?
Airport, I'm going for £3.25.
£3.99. Shame on you, WH Smith. Shame on you. We're naming and we're shaming. So this is a new item. I'm pretty excited about it. Because, you know, this podcast is called What Most People Think. And I like to, it's about what matters to people, not just what the viewpoints are. I think people are pissed off with prices. So you can email whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. Or you can, if you're a Patreon, you can get in touch through the Patreon website. But it's gone too far, the price of stuff. There are companies just out there. Like, I'll tell you another one, name and shame. Five Guys Burgers. I mean, if you get a Five Guys Burger in London, you can literally have a sit-down curry for that price.
Do you know what? During my comedy circuit days, I was partial to a Five Guys Burger, which proved disastrous both for my health and my appearance. However, I didn't like the after effects of a Five Guys. Like, it tasted all right, but afterwards, it kind of felt like you'd eaten a plastic Tesco's bag. And you were carrying it around.
And you needed a personal bank loan of £7,000. That was that's the real sour aftertaste of a Five Guys. So we're naming and shaming, guys. If you are, like me, an angry, grumpy, middle-aged man, furious about prices, contact me through social media. Or if you're a patron, do it through the messages. And we'll name and shame. I'll pick one each week to name and shame. This week, we're going to be talking about politically. Parliament is back after the break for the conference season. And there's quite a lot of stuff swirling. I spoke about it in the breaking news episode. But the Chinese spy affair... They're both called Chris. I don't think it's got a name yet. Maybe we could do something borderline offensive relating to Chinese food. I don't know. We're not really there yet with a name, but we're going to talk about that. excuse me.
Yeah, have they got you?
they're quick. we're going to talk about the peace deal that Trump brokered and about whether or not that will change some people's attitudes towards the man. Just judging from my social media feed, I suspect not. But also Keir Starmer and the UK trying to get a piece of the action, leaning into that positive news out there. So Starmer couldn't wait to get on a plane out to Egypt, a bit like sort of John Terry wearing his full kit. And if we've got time for it, there's just a bit of breaking news saying that Labour might be raising income tax and breaking a manifesto promise, but belatedly.
What a surprise.
Well, but belatedly, they're going to blame it on Brexit.
Of course they are.
And then another subject we've got here is everyone's aware of online misogyny. We've had a lot of coverage on that, the Andrew Tates of this world. But there is a counterpoint to that emerging, I think. There's a hostility the other way, and particularly on TikTok, which is a female-dominated social media platform. And just the sort of like narrative about men, the discourse about men, I think that there might be a story to tell there. You know, where we had middle-class columnists worrying about their son consuming Andrew Tate. Will they one day check what their daughters are looking at? Who knows? And then in the Patreon only, Lenny Henry has called for reparations, and we will consider what would be the real-world implication of any Western government enacting that. All right, new patrons. So yeah, if you want the podcast early, ad-free and with bonus content, and you want to help me with the production cost for this podcast, which I now foot exclusively, do get involved. As Francis will know, we roast the names of the new patrons. Mm-hmm. We've got a Michael Harper today, Francis. Michael Harper.
Michael Harper. Yeah, that's basically somebody who was in an electro dance band in about 1982, played keys, and they failed miserably after one single that showed promise. And yeah, probably hit, scraped in at number 23 in the hit parade.
That was so specific. That's so specific. It feels like maybe that was you. Was that you?
Yeah,
like when you find out one of those guys, like, you know, like was formerly had a life in a pop band. There are those weird. There's about 17 people out there that were in D-Ream that are now selling car insurance. Yeah, Michael Harper. He's like what, Kraftwerk or one of those kind of like, they could have been Erasure if things had gone differently.
And they had more talent.
Oh, you bitch. You absolute bitch. Erasure, by the way, their music stands up pretty well. What is it? Do you want to sound like two old farts right now? What is it, Francis, about music of the 80s? It just has such a fucking distinctive sound, more than any other era.
Oh, absolutely. I think I was talking to a musician, actually, and he was saying to me that basically what happens, part of the reason that music is so bad nowadays is there hasn't been any technological innovation in the production in music instruments. So if you think about the 1950s, technical innovation, electric guitar gave birth to rock and roll. 60s, 70s, 80s, it was the synth. And that's why you had that incredible sound and you had that explosion of electronica music. But yeah, 80s was incredible. Love the 80s. You've got some absolute bangers.
At the moment an 80s song starts, you know exactly where you are. Whereas a lot of stuff, it's almost like the stuff now is sort of too well produced. There's no rough edges to it. God, we sound so fucking old. Let's move on quickly before
we sound correct, Jeff.
Sit down with a cup of Horlicks. Robin Mersch is the other new patron this week. Robin Mersch. But to be fair, you could put them together like as a dance duo, Michael Harper and Robin Mersch. Like they were an early forerunner for Daft Punk. You know the dance music guys that wear like hats?
Yeah.
Like Daft Punk wore hats. Dead Mouse is the guy who wore a big mouse head. You know, if they're wearing a hat, they're not fucking about. They want to be writing scores for films.
Yeah, exactly. Sia is another one, where she's this huge artist, but no one knows what she looks like because she wears like some kind of mask on her head.
That's a bit like Ed Davies' voice. He's very famous politically, but nobody knows what Ed Davies sounds like. So welcome.
Do you know what? I'll tell you this story because it's actually really funny. So I was on a date the other day.
That is funny.
Yeah, thank you. thank you, mate. And I was there. I don't know why I'm telling you this because you're never going to actually let it go now. And then so I was there having a drink with this girl, was going really well. And there was a group of lads in their 20s. And one of them pointed at me and said the words, "He looks like Keir Starmer."
Oh, my God.
And then they all started chanting Keir Starmer at me.
Keir Starmer.
Didn't get a second date, Jeff.
Did you pull out an impression and go, "Look, I will call the Metropolitan Police"?
I think that would have been lost on those boys. I don't think they would have understood or got the political nuance about Keir Starmer's voice. Anyway, I didn't get a second date and that was it.
Yeah, rightly so. Domain talking point. David Domain, our super patron, who keeps an eye on previous week's episodes. He says that we've been discussing pronunciations of things recently. And I was saying the word, you know, alma mater, like where you went to university.
Alma mater, yeah.
Well, this is the point. So you say it like that. That's the correct Latin pronunciation.
Mm-hmm.
What is your alma mater, Francis Falstar?
University of Essex, mate.
Well, well, well. Surprised no one. In British...
what's yours, Geoffrey?
Goldsmiths Liberal Arts College, mate.
Oh, mate.
All those lefties, and somehow the Matrix glitched... and spat me out at one point. I doubt that they ever mention me as alumni. You know what I mean? They got Tracy M in, Damien Hirst. No, mate,
it's you and Josh Howie.
Did he go to Goldsmiths as well?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We really let down the side. And, so apparently you're right. It's alma mater. I also mentioned
means
about
soul mother, Jeffrey.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Alma means soul. Mater means
that's
mother.
Stupid. It should just mean where you went to university. Fucking
mate,
Latin.
I think the rhyming's no, a little bit more about fucking language than you did. Have a bit of respect, mate.
Fucking, that's why Latin died, is shit language. But throwing people in the Tower of London. So I was saying, if these Chinese spy guys, who are both called Chris, the two Chrises, their surnames are Cash and Berry, by the way, which I think is amazing. If Cash and Berry are guilty, I said they should be thrown in the Tower of London. And I mentioned that I vaguely was aware that it was used as a prison until more recently than you'd think. It turns out, David tells us, it was last used as prison in the early 50s. The Cray twins were among the last inmates. And Joseph Jacobs was the last person to be executed at the Tower of London for treason in 1941, a German spy. Well, let's see how this Chinese spy case goes, but we might have to open it up and, I'm not advocating for bringing back execution. I just don't like grasses. What most people think. We're going to do a thank you and a fuck you. I will do the thank you. Have you got a fuck you, by the way?
Yeah, of course I do, mate. I'm a professional.
Well, I mean, the last two times you literally haven't, so it was worthwhile me checking. The thank you is, so I was flying back from Aberdeen to Luton. I had speedy boarding because, you know, doing all right. And so they said to us, right, all the speedy boarding people just go and queue there. There was about 12 of us. And then all the fucking losers, you go and queue to the left. And we waited for ages. And then they let all the normal boarding people through first. And it just made me laugh. It was so funny because it was such a British reaction, is all the speedy boarding people, just, we didn't say anything. We just watched them all board before us. In America, that was, someone would have gone, hey, buddy, what the fuck is going on here? I paid for fucking speedy boarding. And then I thought, maybe that is kind of like SNP socialism type thing where they've gone, look, privilege, wealth is bad. Anyone with wealth should be punished. I mean, listen, they don't want any new drilling licenses or any. They're basically killing Aberdeen as a place, as are the Labour government. So any examples of wealth should be frowned upon. And I feel like we got taught a lesson there.
Yeah, you did, mate. Don't get above your station. You should be where you belong, on a bus back from Scotland.
On a
not
bus.
Not even a plane, Jeffrey. That is above your station. Should be on the mega bus.
We've all got delusions of grandeur. What is your fuck you?
Mate, so many. But you know who's I'm going to say is a fuck you? Right. Zora Sultana did a speech about fascism. Of course she did. That's all that side. They can only talk about fascism. Everything's fascism. Your fascism, my mum's fascism, the cat's fascism, everything's fascism, right?
That's a weird mum cuss out. Your mum's a fascist, mate.
Your mum's my mum's pretty right wing. My mum flirts with it occasionally. But anyway, I mean, she's half South American. Those people love a bit of fascism.
It's either one or the other there, isn't it? Eh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's either like we're going to, you know, kill everyone or viva la revolución. Anyway. But she says we're going to fight fascism wherever we see it, at the ballot box, on the boat. You go, all right, fair enough. And she goes, on the streets. And you go, did you just advocate violence? Is that what you just did, Zara? And what is fascism to you? If you think Nigel Farage is a fascist, which she clearly does, what, you're basically advocating for someone to go up and punch Nigel Farage or people who are in the Reform Party or support Reform? You go, do you understand how incredibly irresponsible that is?
Yeah, and but when they do escalatory language, it's coming from a good place, see? It's like when that, who was the Labour mayor guy in Bristol that argued for people's throats to be cut?
Oh, Ricky, what's his face?
Yeah, when he pulled that finger across his throat, it was just like, he was actually satirising violence. I don't know if you know. But if a right winger does that, they absolutely 1,000,000% mean that, and they're going to do it within the next 5 seconds, right? You know the rules, come on. All right, we are going to catch up. There's quite a few political stories swirling. So we're going to start off with the swirlingness of the Chinese Spygate, two Chris's, two number 57s. So it's probably going to get more prominence this week, but this spy story, as I mentioned in the breaking news, these two fellas, Chris and Chris, Cash and Berry, were arrested April 23, charged 2024, a year later. And it recently, the trial came apart, and one of the director of public prosecutions wrote to MPs saying it was because the government hadn't provided the pertinent info, right? That's quite a big intervention, I would think, right? That is like a very political move. I'd say unprecedented. Starmer immediately tries to blame the Tories. I mean, they do have a role in this, right? They were in government for a good portion of this, but it was sort of classic. Look, the Conservative government, they get 14 years. And I was sort of thinking, does Starmer just reflexively blame anything on the Tory? Like, even if he comes down and, like, he's left, like, the milk on its side in the fridge and his missus is like, Keir or Francis, because she gets confused because she looks so like. But just like, what are you doing? It's like, look, I'm not going to take this disgraceful, the state that the Conservative left milk in. Do you think he just does that as like a reflex to any criticism?
I think when Keir's unable to consummate his marriage, mate, he blames the Conservatives.
Just John Major just popped into my brain. I mean, they're similar on the charisma levels. I'd say John Major has way more riz, as the kids would say.
Mate, ask Edwina Curry. John Major was a top-level shagger. We need to give the man his due.
I would go to my grave saying that that guy has an effect on women. He's tall, he's broad-shouldered, he's got what women would call big dick energy, that calm sort of assuredness. I reckon he's packing. But anyway, this is what always happens. We've been blown off course. But I suppose the question is why, maybe this will become a big story this week, because maybe Kemi will have one of her good days out of PMQs. It is weird how long it's taken it to become a big story. I mean, Keir Starmer getting free glasses was, like, by some degree a bigger story than potentially the kind of constructive collapsing of a spy trial. Rishi Sunak coming back early from D-Day was an infinitely bigger story. Is it just because this involves technicalities and the public don't give a fuck about technicalities? Boring.
I think it's because it involves technicalities. It involves legal technicalities, which once you get into it, you understand that you get into the weeds of it. It's not a very simple cut and dried case, but also because people don't understand the level of threat that China poses to the West. It involves geopolitics. You need to be able to unravel all of that and then in order to actually understand what's really happening here. And I think for most people, they just don't have the time. Do you know what I mean? Mm. The world's busy. You've got family. You've got kids. You've got, you know, you've got all of these things. Plus, you can't afford anything because it costs £29.87 to buy a can of Lilt.
But then maybe is there some public sympathy here? Just speculating that, like, kind of, like, yeah, it is tricky for him to get this spy case over the line. You've got to say China's an enemy. We're skint. Maybe this is not great timing for us. I mean, are we so skint now that we have to get openly cucked in public? Is Britain sitting on the cuck chair?
Mate, of course we're sitting on the cuck chair.
But you know, like, we have to, the blokes, like, have to pretend that they don't know their wife's having an affair for their own mental health. Is that what we're sort of... literally, like, going, well, you're going off to play tennis again, are you? Well, have a lovely time. Can I talk to you about that business deal when you get back? Have fun.
No, do you know what we are? We were, like, I'd like to think of ourselves as a Premier League player that was brilliant in the 90s. And now the money's run out. Mm. The notoriety's gone. We're just burnt out. We're like three divorces in. There's no money. And, you know, we've become a punchline.
Is that what we are? You know, like, saying former Premier League ace spotted sleeping under park bench. Is that Britain now?
Yeah, exactly. You know what we actually are? We're actually Manchester United. That's where we are. Where we're just like, oh, you, well done. You beat Burnley. How about that? That's where we are. Britain is basically Man United. Great in the 90s and the 60s. And now just a punchline to a crap joke.
Fucking hell. Tied that one up beautifully. What most people think. All right, we're just going to sort of tag this story on. If we're talking about the Labour Party, there is a in the press today the idea that Labour are going to break their manifesto pledge and raise income tax. Kind of a dumb pledge anyway. I always thought it was a bit weird because right at the end of that campaign, the election campaign, which they were clearly going to win, there was that one leadership debate where Rishi Sunak seemed to shock Keir Starmer by saying, he's going to raise your taxes. And then, like, that, he didn't push back on that enough. They shat the bed and then committed to a bunch of things that are sort of... tied their hands, which is, it was a very sort of weak campaign for them generally, and that was a weird thing to do. But the idea now is that if they do raise income tax, they're going to peg it to low, peg it, cuck it.
There you go. It's all going. Still got it, mate.
Still going on at number 10.
I can tell you're on tour.
Mate, I'm knackered. But they're going to peg it to low productivity post-Brexit. Now, they're going to say they're going to blame Brexit, which is something that none of the main parties have really done for a while. The thing is, I think this could work because there's still a large audience of people out there that are very receptive to this idea. This will work with sort of the more lefty type Lib Dems. This will work with a lot of Labour voters. Just blaming Brexit, it might find an audience. People go, finally, because in their mind, people are just telling the truth. The problem is they knew about Brexit quite a long time before they made these pledges. Mm. So if they blame now, does it not look, it should look transparently like they're scrabbling around for a reason.
I mean, to me, this looks incredibly weak. It looks incredibly weak. It looks like you're scrabbling around, not just, I wouldn't use the word reason, Jeff, I'd use the word excuse for your own poor performance. It's just simply not good enough. You knew about Brexit. That was what the country voted for. Whether you agreed or disagreed, that's what the country voted for. And let's also be honest, that is also what a large number of left-wing and red wall voters voted for. So not only are you looking weak, you're also pointing the finger at your core base and going, oh, you picked the wrong horse, mate. And part of the reason the country's up the swanny is because you wanted this policy, which is fundamentally damaging to our economy.
In fairness to them, would they be attacking the voters? Are they just trying to say this is a reason? I mean, the productivity problem started after the financial crash.
Yeah, in 2008.
And there have been additional issues. And then post-COVID, there have been issues. I mean, maybe like, is there a political party that would ever have the balls to say, you lot just need to fucking work harder? Because, you know, like the big problems in this country are low productivity and low birth rate. People just say, you need to fuck more and you need to work harder. That's the bottom line. I'm the only one. Because if you don't have more kids, then we need immigration to fill jobs. You have to have more sex. Got to have more kids. Got to work harder. Like a sort of real pull your boots up, old-fashioned Victorian, hard messaging.
Do you know what? Like, I actually do agree. I do agree with you. I think that's one of the central crises. Well, one of the central reasons that we are currently in a crisis is that we have a generation of politicians who can't or won't tell the truth to the electorate, to the general public. And the problem is that is a fault of the British, of the British voter. Because every time a politician goes somewhere close, not even being honest, but just somewhere close to actually telling the truth, we behave like a bunch of spoiled toddlers and have a meltdown.
Well, I thought that for a while with immigration, is that you either needed to make one of or other of the arguments. So you either say, it's clear that a lot of the electorate want immigration to be reduced. The net effect of this might be that our economy is smaller. But if you want your society to change at a slower rate, this would be the price we pay, but that's what we can deliver. Or we need this, so we're going to integrate better and we're going to have a society that we all feel part of. But no one ever makes like either one of those arguments. And I guess now, if Labour had actually said this at the election, they might have actually won support. They might have actually had like some Lib Dems that would have hopped to them and said, right, they're actually telling what we believe to be the truth on Brexit. But saying it now, it would be so easy to attack them if they say this. That's the point, isn't it? It'll be very easy to attack them as them looking around for someone to throw a stone at.
Well, this is exactly it. And what it comes across is a leader that is weak, that has done U-turn after U-turn after U-turn. This is another flip-flopping. And they're just looking for an excuse. And it looks incredibly weak. Not that it actually matters, really, when it comes to the Tory party. Because the Tory party, at the moment, you look at the Conservative Party conference. If that was your gig, if that was your tour show and you had that many empty seats, you'd think my career's over here. No one's coming to see Jeff.
Well, I did in Dundee on Thursday, and I came back from that. I basically had a Tory moment in Dundee. But look, hey, Kemi made a good speech. The comeback is on, Francis. The Tory comeback is on. 2029, four more years. All right, rattling through the subjects here. Now, as we're talking, Donald Trump may well be addressing the Israeli parliament. I can't remember. I tried to learn the name, but I've fucking forgotten it.
The Knesset, isn't it?
Look at you, you international Latin-speaking wanker. This is why you're going on all these dates.
Yeah.
Mixed heritage, can speak Latin, knows what the Israeli parliament... You really are actually quite a Renaissance man, aren't you?
Yeah, I am, mate. I am. You know, and then I've got the exterior, you know, rough and ready. So it's a complete package, mate.
You look and sound like a reformed hooligan. Like you do, but you read the odd book. Fair play to you. But he will be speaking, and there is this thing that's happening, you know, with the hostages being returned, the exchange that's going on in the Middle East, and this first phase of this peace. Now, fuck knows whether or not how long this will last, but it's undeniably a breakthrough that hadn't happened before. And, you know, it's particularly in Israel, Donald Trump is getting a lot of the credit for it. But it's been interesting to note the percentage. I've heard some people say, look, willing to sort of swallow, eat their hat on Donald Trump. There are people on the progressive left and so on that are doing that. But there's definitely a group of people that are pissed off that it was him. I mean, undeniably pissed off that it was Donald Trump, you know? So they're trying to find other ways to attack him. Now, you could say, well, look, this doesn't change what's happened, how many people have died in Gaza. It doesn't change the push for a two-state solution and all that sort of stuff. You go, yeah. Okay, I get all that. But just be honest, man. You're really pissed off that it was him that did it.
Oh, absolutely. They're livid. They're seething. The guy who they hate the most, who basically is Hitler part two with a comb over, has suddenly in a dodgy tan, has swanned in, and they've been talking about the genocide. And look, let's be honest about it. The war is obviously awful. The fact that civilians and children and all the rest of it has died is a tragedy. Of course, we all know that to be true. But the fact that it's him, this hamburger-eating, Diet Coke-swilling, minge-grabbing man...
Whoa.
Has come along.
Minge. Where's that word come from?
I was going to say pussy, but it doesn't.
I mean, in the English accent. I mean, yeah. But that's the point, isn't it? Is all of the criticisms, you know, all of the stuff that he said, you know, he's got a civil conviction for sexual assault, I believe.
Yeah.
You can't call it rape because he's already won a lawsuit against that. But so nothing changes all of that stuff. But it has been odd to note people's reluctance. And like say, you know, like the death toll, all of that stuff, they will want a reckoning for certain things if they believe that there have been war crimes, that all of that stuff. But what was just odd was just in the moment, some people couldn't allow themselves to say, well, I'm glad that is now not happening, at least for a while. God willing, it will be forever, right? You know, let's be optimistic. Yeah. But what was interesting was the UK trying to take some credit. And what happened was there was an interesting diplomatic back and forth with Steve Witkoff, the American guy. He sort of laughed at the idea that the UK had done anything. And then today he's done a tweet saying, thank God for the UK and Jonathan Powell, who coincidentally is under a lot of pressure over the China thing. He just happened to mention Jonathan Powell by name. Do you think that Keir's asked for a little favour from Uncle Donald there?
Mate, I think
give us some credit, please.
Look, it's been so bad for Keir. It's been so bad. You know what Keir reminds me of, right? He reminds me of a guy in secondary school. Nothing's going well for him. Mm-hmm. He's walked in on his high school sweetheart, snogging the football captain, and he's like, you see that? And he points at them. He went, points at the captain, goes, see that bloke? That's me. Mm-hmm. And we're like, mate, I don't think it is you. And he's like, no, it is. That's me.
You know, I mentioned he's doing, you know, he's going over to Egypt for this announcement and stuff. Do you think he should do like a full John Terry, full kit wanker? Like just as a joke, get dressed up in his full Arsenal kit?
At this point, I don't think it could get any worse for him. I really don't. I think whatever he does, it's going to look terrible. I don't hate Keir Starmer. I'm not like people on the left who hate him and go, I just go, mate, you're so bad. It's at this point where you just feel sorry for him. You know what I mean? That's where I am.
Do you know what would be funny? If Donald Trump tries to give him so much credit, it's actually uncomfortable. Like, it's all right, fine, give him a little pat, a couple of tweets here and there. But if it's like this guy, come on, Keir, brings him right out to the front, really, even Keir, like, can't raise his eyes from the floor, go, well, you know, I mean, two things. It's kind of funny, but it does show Trump likes Starmer. I mean, that is, in some ways, he must think, how have I ended up where my only real friend in the world is Donald fucking Trump? Okay, just a quick hype here. I've got, as I say, in full touring mode this week. So I'm recording this on Monday. I am in Swindon on Wednesday, Maidenhead on Thursday. Both of those are sold out. But then Aldershot on Saturday, there's decent availability for that. Sold quite a few, but it's a big room. Brighton is nearly sold out. Going into the following week, Milton Keynes is sold out. Stroud, we've still got tickets for. Reading, there's still tickets. So if you fancy any of those, do get on Live Nation and buy tickets. Francis, obviously still doing great work with Trigonometry. Your podcast as well, your solo pod, give that a little...
It's called Francis Foster Sort Your Life Out. Make sure to check it out. It's great fun. They're doing very well, actually, putting out some satirical sketches on the old Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking the piss out of Zach Polanski, the gift that keeps on giving. So give me a follow, Francis J. Foster, on there.
Francis J. Foster. That is, yeah. Is that like Homer J. Simpson? Are you going in the...
No, yeah, I was thinking more Edgar J. Hoover, but we can do whatever one you want.
Okay, we're going to talk about young women potentially hating men.
They prefer the term birds, Jeff.
Birds. Do birds hate blokes? I'm just trying to think of how I title this episode. It is tempting to put that as the title. Yeah. Or if I was going on like one of those political debate things, do Gen Z women hate men? That would get the callers in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would do.
It's not really a debate. I just think it's interesting, right? TikTok. Now, you know your social media, right? Mm. YouTube skews a bit towards men. It's 55-45. Mm-hmm. I actually thought it'd be more. YouTube seems a very blokey place, but apparently 55-45. Instagram skews a bit towards women, 55-45 mm-hmm. the other way. But TikTok is 67-33. Now, I'd imagine there's a bit of non-binary in there as well. But essentially, two-thirds of the audience on TikTok are women. And I've just noticed that maybe this is my algorithm. Maybe I spent too much time looking at young women. I realize I'm incriminating myself. But it is become a breeding ground for quite a hostile view to men. Now, I'm not talking about like, you know, the kind of toxic male influences. It's not operating at that level, but it's not that far below. And maybe, you know, the people like the Andrew Tates of this world have influenced women. They've seen this stuff about women and this is the clapback. But I still think we should talk about both sides. So to get into this subject, we're just going to play a clip of the actress Julia Fox. And this is an interview she was giving plugging her new film.
I think the youth needs to hear what real men are. I think there's a, you know, there's masculinity.
But what are real men?
Right. To me, a real man is a responsible man.
Because every time a man does some shit, they'll be like, that's not a real man. And it's like, what looks is? Like a man to me.
I think a real man is in touch with his feminine
side. Looks like a duck
side,
and it walks like, you know, a duck, mean? Yeah.
I think a real man is, you know, knows how to unstrap from his ego.
I don't know. I think the real man thing is just a thing like that people invented to like excuse bad behavior, you know?
Yeah,
like all men are real men.
Said like,
you know,
a real man.
Period.
So what's interesting about that clip is they're promoting their new film, Marlon Wayans, you know, an older actor, very, very dignified, nice, humble guy. And he was going to make a positive point about real men. And, you know, he was going to go on to talk about how you model positive masculinity. But she just kept interrupting him, right? And she kept interrupting him. And I saw it had gone super viral. I mean, it's like one of the biggest clips on TikTok this year. And I presumed that all the comments would be, well, that was, because this is almost such an old fart now. I thought all the comments would be, well, that was a bit rude. Why wouldn't she let him talk? He seemed to be wanting to make a nice point. No. All the comments were like, yes, girl. Yeah, you tell him to shut the fuck up. And these were comments. The comments themselves were getting like tens and tens of thousands of likes. And essentially, you know, what she was sort of saying was that the actions of toxic, violent, aggressive, you know, narcissistic men should be, you can't now make a distinction, you know, the actions of those men is somehow all men. You're good with the social media. Is this a trend that you've noticed as well?
Well, it's very interesting. So last year when I was in Miami, it was on my YouTube channel and people can go and watch it. And it's very interesting. So I did a little documentary on dating culture, hookup culture. And I went to Miami. I was in Miami when we were doing one of our America trips. And I was talking to lots of young men and young women. And the schism between young men and young women is actually very worrying. The young men that I talked to were very, very cynical towards young women. They said that young women are increasingly becoming more materialistic, more looks-based. Everything was about, you've got to be 6 foot, you've got to earn six figures, you've got to have a six-pack is the kind of the classic trope that gets repeated again and again. And they were very, very pro-Andrew Tate because their argument was, in a society which denigrates masculinity, Tate is one of the few people that celebrates masculinity, that shows men a way to go push forward and to succeed. the women were very, very, very suspicious of men. They were saying that the men were only after one thing, this the dating culture, and also this the way that men are being at the moment means that there are actually, I mean, talking about, let's be honest, like sexual assault, like literally walking up to women, feeling entitled that they can grab them without just walking up and simply being able to do that. And the thing that I noticed was just like the sadness with the, between both groups, because both groups felt that they were unable to trust each other, and that actually all either side was interested in, one was sex and the other one was just material possessions.
So it's
and
kind of transactional. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely fair to say, like, a lot of the things, the issues women have are legitimate things that they talk about. But I just don't think this side of it gets scrutinised. We have a lot of a chat about what are your sons watching. I think it's also legitimate to say what are your daughters watching. And what you say is absolutely right. We all know that social media, what it does best is it divides people. And surprise, surprise, the consumption of content has managed to create a divide between the biggest divide, which is the 50-50 one, between men and women. And there was another trend which underlined this as well, which is that they were talking about the male loneliness epidemic. And there was a hugely successful trend where basically women were saying, me finding out about the male loneliness epidemic and sort of dancing and celebrating. Right. And this is, we're talking about an epidemic that, you know, in some cases leads to suicide. And there was one sort of influencer, and I watched her do a clip, and she basically said, you know, male loneliness is natural selection. And I was like, fucking hell. I mean, that was, she was sort of sounds like, you know, when you hear about those creepy eugenicists from the early 1900s that would basically base their racism in like science. No, the reason that the white man, you know, it literally sounded like that. And I kind of thought maybe, you know, you get this effect where there's a lot of young men that have only ever heard the word masculinity in association with toxic. There's also, we only think about, well, what effect has that had on men and how disillusioned or disaffected that makes them feel. You remember the other side of that equation is there's a group of young women that that's all they've heard about men too. And we end up with this situation where there's just like you say, obviously social media should be caveated with, you know, it's not all people, right? But the numbers are significant enough that I do think, look, maybe mainstream media in this country won't fully grapple with it, but I do think at some point the columnists and the TV shows need to say, just check what your daughters are consuming as well, because it's absolutely right to talk about men that are sexist sorts, but equally, if they're coming out of it with a view that makes them sort of hate men, is that a good place to be either?
No, it's a disastrous place to be. And then when you look at the fact that actually not only are they polarized, male and females, particularly in Generation Alpha and Generation Z, not only are they polarized in terms of the way that they view each other and the deep suspicions, they're also polarized in terms of their politics. You look at a lot of the boys, they're veering more and more to the right, and the girls are veering more and more to the left. So then you go, all right, so how are we going to bridge this gap? You know, if not only do they distrust each other on a very personal and fundamental level, but they also distrust each other politically. And then you're going to go, you know, you're going to have, you know, women who say, oh, never kiss the Tory is one, but I'm sure never date a Republican, never date someone on the right. You must agree with this. And then the men who are just like, oh, if you've got pronouns in your bio, that shows that you're some kind of weird. And you go, already life is difficult enough as it is. Already we're dividing people into camps. And you think about the population crisis, we're just making it increasingly worse. It's just getting worse because people are not meeting each other, and they're literally, there is no connection happening, because even before you get a chance to meet each other in real life, you're going, oh, she's got pronouns, or he said that, or whatever it may be.
And what these kids are missing out on, sorry, we should probably introduce a note of levity here, but I think it's a good discussion, is they're missing out on the joy of a grudge fuck.
Yeah. You know? Angry sex, Jeffrey.
Having sex with somebody that you don't fully like, you know, it's got to be mutual, you know, like you have issues with their opinions. There's a frisson there. A frisson. You're a language guy. What did I mean to say?
Frisson.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. The idea that you have to agree with people is fundamentally ridiculous. I'm referring to a slightly more lighthearted example of just maybe certain double standards in the media. I was watching Strictly. I had a rare Saturday off, right? I was watching Strictly. And Shirley Ballas, twice, basically perved out over a male contestant. And I do think, like, you know, we have this, I mean, there's a slightly serious point underneath this, is your boys are spending more time at the gym trying to bulk up, get big and all this sort of stuff. Mm. And then Nitro from Gladiator had his top off and he's got an amazing, like, hench physique. And she was like, yeah, I like all this and particularly that. And she gave him this look and I was like, oh my God, it literally took me back to, you know, when they show those clips from the 70s where the host would be being a bit creepy around a younger woman. And I'm sure, like, Shirley Bassey, like, meant no harm, didn't make want to make him feel uncomfortable. And maybe he likes that from, maybe men quite like that from an ego point of view. But what I thought about was my 9-year-old son watching that going, oh, is that what you have to have? Like, and why is she allowed to say that about him? But if Anton Dubek was going, oh, darling, look at your fucking pins on that. You know what I mean? Like, that isn't, I mean, like, if he said it like that, it would blatantly be wrong. But there are, I guess, a number of double standards that maybe boys are seeing now that probably aren't helping that intersex hostility.
No, agreed. Like, it's fine to sexualize men and, you know, you just have to go on the tube in London and everywhere seems to be an advert for Magic Mike. Whereas if you had something for the female equivalent, people would be like, how dare you? You can't say Beachbody ready. This is a disgrace.
Well, they would say, like, you know, women have had thousands of years of objectification. That's absolutely true. But the problem is, if you're a 15-year-old boy today, you haven't had thousands of years of anything. You're just a 15-year-old boy today. That's kind of like my issue. Women are sort of enjoying the thing of objectifying men. One thing I've noticed as well is the gratuitous shirt-off scene now that's come into so many films. I was watching this film the other day, and me and my wife both fucking cracked up laughing because out of nowhere, the male character just took his shirt off and just rippled his biceps for a while. I was like, yeah, I get it. You know, there was a long time where that would have been like Sharon Stone, you know what I mean, or Kim Basinger doing that. But fine, I have had the male privilege years. I'm willing to do some payback. But yeah, I just wonder if you're a teenager or a young male, you're going to view all this stuff slightly differently.
What most people think.
Okay, we're going to talk now about Lenny Henry. I don't know why. Yeah. This feels like the one show this week. We're jumping around from one thing to the other. But we're going to talk about Lenny Henry's call for reparations for slavery. So that'll be in the Patreon-only section. But for everybody else, it'll be the end of the show. Okay, well, I hope the patrons enjoyed that. So that went everywhere. That went from saying that maybe reparations are, you know, a tad unrealistic in this financially constrained age to Francis teaching a kid called God King. So if you want to know what that is, go to the Patreon website and sign up. But just before I let you go, Francis, just remind us of your podcast.
It's called Francis Foster Sorts Your Life Out. It's available on YouTube audio and also, of course, Trigonometry. If you haven't listened or watch what you're doing. But that's pretty much it, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure, Jeffrey. And I hope the tour goes well.
I thought that after a strong opening, I didn't actually bully you that much.
No, you didn't. I was kind of disappointed. The only reason I do this is because I secretly like it.
Is it sort of like, you know, businessmen go and get spanked? You just come on.
Yeah. I remember actually, I was a wind up as a kid. And I used to, my favourite thing was winding up people in the rugby team and then and then legging it, and then they would chase me. And occasionally they'd catch me and give me a beating. And I remember once, like, I really got like a kicking. And then I walked into the classroom. Bear in mind, this was the 90s. No one cared about this kind of stuff. Yeah. My art teacher looked at me and went, it's almost like you need it, Francis.
That should be the title of your next tour.
Yeah.
Has that ever come up at counselling, the idea that you sort of deliberately get people to beat you up?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll leave you with that. And I'll say, listeners, depending on the news cycle, hopefully there'll be a breaking news later this week. But thanks for listening. And, oh, fuck it, I don't know why. I really had the momentum there. And yes.